You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
Welcome to the Kotke Ride Home for Wednesday, August 25th, 2021. I'm Jackson Bird. Today, the Paralympic Games kicked off in Tokyo last night. Here's what you need to know and a brief history of the games. Plus, how did the Pfizer vaccine end up with the brand name Comirnaty? And what were some of the other contenders? Here are some of the cool things from the news today. Last night, the 2020 Paralympic Games officially kicked off in Tokyo with the opening ceremony and parade of nations. The games will last through September 5th and are comprised of 539 events across 22 different sports, from newcomers badminton and taekwondo to old standards like swimming, track, and wheelchair rugby. The Paralympic Games officially began under their current name in Rome in 1960, but they got their start way back in the 1940s, initially as a way to help rehabilitate civilians and veterans injured in World War II and to improve the way society viewed disabled people. Quoting NPR, German-British neurologist Dr. Ludwig Gutmann, who actually escaped from the Nazis, opened a spinal injury center at the Stoke Mandeville Hospital in 1944 at the request of the British government. At that time in the UK, quote, you were left in hospital to die because the assumption was that you wouldn't have anything to contribute back to society, so you might as well be allowed to slip away, end quote from Baroness Tanny Grey Thompson, one of Britain's most successful Paralympians who told NPR that in 2012. Gutmann challenged that notion, she explained. The activities there grew both in scope and intensity. As the International Paralympic Committee, or IPC, put it, in time, rehabilitation sport evolved to recreational sport and then competitive sport. 4 years later, as the 1948 Olympic Games kicked off in London, Gutmann organized an archery competition for wheelchair athletes. The Stoke Mandeville Games went international 4 years later when Dutch ex-servicemen joined in. They became the Paralympic Games in Rome in 1960 and have been held every 4 years ever since. End quote. The first Winter Paralympic Games were in 1976 in Sweden. Originally, the Paralympic Games were held in different cities from the Olympics, but since 1988 and 1992, the Summer and Winter Paralympic Games, respectively, have been held in the same cities and venues as the Olympics. And by the way, there's a common misunderstanding that the para in Paralympic Games stands for paralyzed, maybe paraplegic, but you know those words wouldn't apply to all of the athletes. Maybe you never even questioned it. The Paralympics just means the Paralympics. But in fact, the para comes from the Greek for beside or alongside, and is meant to describe how the Paralympics run parallel to the Olympics, and as the IPC says, quote, illustrates how the two movements exist side by side, end quote. In common reception, however, they don't quite exist equally. A lot of people, exhausted by the nonstop Olympic coverage, are burned out by the time the Paralympics come around, and limited press coverage means a lot of people don't even know that they're happening or what exactly they are. They've been getting more and more attention in recent years, though. The 2012 London Games were a big turning point in terms of recognition, coverage, and even corporate sponsorships. A big part of that being that London had a certain amount of pride at having hosted the very first Paralympic Games back when they were still the Stoke Mandeville Games. But this year might be another big turning point because this year marks the first time that the Paralympics will be getting primetime coverage here in the U.S., NBC will be presenting a record 1,200 hours of programming of the Paralympic Games across their NBC Sports Network, their Olympic Channel, and their main network channel, NBC. Finally, people interested in the games will have an easy way to keep up with them, and folks who've never really looked into it before might find themselves following along. Now, as I said before, there are 22 sports in the Paralympics this year, of which two are completely unique to the Paralympics, with no analog in the Olympics. One of those is boccia. Quoting the BBC, the aim of the game is to get your team's ball closer to the white target ball, the jack, than the other team. Once all the balls have been played, points are given with the side closest to the jack getting a point for every ball they have nearer than the other team's closest ball. The side with the highest score is the winner. End quote. Most boccia athletes have conditions affecting all four of their limbs, often muscular dystrophy or cerebral palsy. The other unique sport is goalball, one of several sports for athletes with visual impairments. Quoting again from the BBC, the ball must make contact with certain areas of the court, and once it has passed these points, those defending will attempt to block the ball with their bodies. Each game is split into 12-minute chunks, making it fast-paced. End quote. Other sports you'll see include sitting volleyball, triathlon, wheelchair basketball, wheelchair fencing, cycling, equestrian, powerlifting, canoe, and taekwondo, which, as I said, is new this year and is also the first full-contact Paralympic sport. Although wheelchair rugby athletes have certainly made their sport as close to full contact as they possibly can, that game is brutal. Definitely make sure to check it out during these games, but if you want a primer, I also highly recommend the 2005 documentary Murder Ball, which is what the original name of the sport was, just to give you an idea of how intense it is. Now, I mentioned how boccia is typically played by athletes with conditions affecting all four limbs, and goalball is typically played by athletes with visual impairments, and obviously sports like wheelchair basketball are played by wheelchair users. Some of the sports are designed for specific disabilities, and many of the sports have different classes based on different impairments. That's how you get 539 events across just 22 sports. Here's how CNN explains the process of classification. Quote, firstly, it has to be deemed whether the athlete has an underlying health condition, which has led to a permanent eligible impairment. The assessment is carried out by the International Sport Federation governing body, which oversees each individual sport. There are 10 different impairment types. They're often divided into three groups of impairment: physical, impaired muscle power, impaired range of movement, limb deficiency, leg length difference, hypertonia, ataxia, athetosis, and short stature, as well as vision and intellectual. Once it's been assessed whether or not an athlete has an eligible impairment, it then has to be determined whether the athlete meets the minimum impairment criteria. Each sport's classification has rules to describe how severe an eligible impairment must be for an athlete to be considered eligible to compete. Examples of the minimum impairment criteria include maximum height defined for athletes with short stature, or a level of amputation defined for athletes with limb deficiency. The criteria is based on scientific research. End quote. Now, classes don't necessarily mean everyone has the exact same impairment, just that they can compete at similar levels in that particular sport. So, for example, some sports like ice hockey and weightlifting have just one class, while the track events have 20 different classes. But just like with the Olympics, you don't have to understand all of the rules and regulations to enjoy watching the competition. And even with the limitations and risks continuing from the pandemic, the 2020 Paralympic Games are shaping up to be one of the best yet. OutSports reports that a record number of openly LGBTQ+ athletes are competing this year, twice as many as at the last Summer Games, and NPR reports that these games also have the most women athletes ever. As of recording, Australia and China are at the top of the medal board, but we still have almost 2 weeks to go, and I am excited to watch all the athletes shine in much-deserved primetime coverage here in the States. Now that the Pfizer-BioNTech COVID vaccine has officially received FDA approval here in the U.S., the companies behind it are allowed to market it, which maybe, I don't know, they'll be able to do more successfully than anyone else has yet in trying to get the vaccine hesitant to get it. But along with that marketing means the broad rollout of its official brand name, Comirnaty. Comirnaty. C-O-M-I-R-N-A-T-Y. Comirnaty. The internet, as you can imagine, did not give them an easy time with this name. Twitter user Happy Farmer tweeted, quote, Comirnaty, it's easy to remember. It's like saying community when you're drunk. End quote. And ICU doctor Nick Mark tweeted, quote, I feel like the brainstorm session that came up with the name Comirnaty either ended too soon or went on way too long. End quote. Based on what naming experts are saying, I'm gonna go with way too long and probably too many cooks in the kitchen. And when I say cooks, I mean CEOs. Here's the thing, though. Even though Community is getting all the attention right now, it's not actually news. It was announced as the brand name for the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine at least as early as December 2020, and Beth Snyder-Bullock, senior editor at Fierce Pharma, did a great write-up back then talking to the folks who came up with the name, specifically Brand Institute, one of the top naming agencies in the world. Scott Piergrossi, Brand Institute President of Operations and Communications, told Fierce Pharma last year, quote, "The name is coined from COVID-19 immunity and then embeds the mRNA in the middle, which is the platform technology, and as a whole, the name is meant to evoke the word community," end quote. And continuing from Fierce Pharma, quote, "The goal in naming drugs is to overlap ideas and layer meaning into a name," he said. In this case, the high priority concepts the team started with were COVID immunization and the mRNA technology. The clients themselves came up with community as an image and association they wanted to elicit, Piergrossi said, end quote. Fair enough. Mike Carr from the Namestormers agency, who have named things like Angry Orchard and CarMax, told The Intelligencer, quote, "We always give clients an honest assessment. This is about as bad a name as I've seen," end quote. Other naming professionals The Intelligencer spoke to were a bit more sympathetic. Michael Beirut from Pentagram Design, sounding very much like me anytime I try not to get immediately mad at an interface redesign on a social media platform, said, quote, "I try not to be too harsh with new names because the problem with new names is that they're new," end quote. And Margaret Wolfson, founder and creative director of River and Wolf, told The Intelligencer via email, quote, "The creators of this name packed all these spot-on allusions into four syllables. That's not an easy thing to do, especially given the hyper-strict regulations and issues around pharmaceutical naming and trademarking. The name might be a little difficult for some speakers to say, as Mirnity doesn't quite roll off the tongue and just misses the mark as an elegant sound. That said, people will get used to that, and the melding of relevant concepts makes it a winning mark," end quote. Molly Davis, chief storyteller and strategist at One Supona, had similar thoughts, quote, "Often when there are many naming objectives, the real story behind the name gets lost, and the effort is just to appease executives. At first glance, Community feels as confusing as these few years have felt," end quote. And Intelligencer made a point to emphasize that Davis accidentally misspelled Community in her email, something I did several times while drafting today's show. Community isn't the only name for the Pfizer vaccine, though. That's the brand name, but it has a generic name, too. Tozinamarin. T-O-Z-I-N-A-M-E-R-A-N. Tozinamarin. Pierre Grossi from Brand Institute explained to Fierce Pharma last December that the Tozina part, quote, "is the invented prefix required by the World Health Organization, while the second half, Marin, is the required suffix for the new mRNA vaccines," end quote. So that one was pretty much decided for them, but there were other contenders for the brand name. Comirnaty could have been Covuity, Arnaxcovi, Covimerna, or Arnextract. And honestly, I don't know if I like any of those better. I similarly don't know how to pronounce them and would not remember exactly how they're spelled. But now, you may have heard of Moderna's COVID vaccine brand name, which is objectively better in every possible way. They're going with Spikevax. I mean, how cool is that? It sounds awesome. It clearly references the spike proteins from COVID-19 and the vaccine, and it's both easy to pronounce and spell. Spikevax, spelled S-P-I-K-E-V-A-X, beat out other ideas from Moderna, including Spikevax, spelled with a Y instead of an I, mRNAvax, Mvax, COVIDMvax, and COVIDvax. They also, and this is a big yikes, back in January of 2020, Moderna filed for four different names with the patent office that used the city of Wuhan's name, including WuhanVax and Wuhan Corona Mvax. Fortunately, those are listed as abandoned, according to Fierce Pharma. Now, the Johnson & Johnson Janssen vaccine hasn't announced a brand name just yet, and hopefully they are still workshopping because their filed trademarks as of last fall were Resinav, Fampelson, Akvzin, Jacobdin, Avsindin, and Jacovav. I mean, what even? Also, according to The Intelligencer, BioNTech has a bunch of other possible names that they're sitting on for other medications, including Ribosphere and Bladder Typer. Just incredible. And Intelligencer makes a point that for these companies, these names represent a bit of a rebrand. You know, we've memorized the sponsor names of the vaccines. We have associations with them. Beirut told Intelligencer, quote, Pfizer is kind of the Coca-Cola. Moderna feels a little like Pepsi. J&J ended up being like RC Cola, an off-brand funny thing, end quote. Maybe that's why Moderna felt it had to go with the super cool Spikevax, since it thought it was playing second fiddle to Pfizer's Coca-Cola. And while, like the naming experts said, the companies themselves had the ultimate say, it is interesting to note that the naming agency Brand Institute came up with all of these. Not just Pfizer-BioNTech, but also Moderna and AstraZeneca. Their website proudly announces that they're behind all of the thus far publicly announced COVID-19 vaccine brand names. And for the record, AstraZeneca's is Vaxzevria. Vaxzevria. And you know, at this point, I don't even know what to say about that. The Verge makes a good point about all the hoopla and discourse surrounding these names and the implied pressure the naming agencies are under, quote, The names are goofy, but the absurdity is highlighted because other than during our dark pandemic era, when would anyone notice the brand name of a vaccine? We're at a perfect intersection of having enough time to care, enough fear to obsess, and enough nihilism to laugh. Remember this next year when new flu shot brand names drop. Afluria 2 will need your attention, end quote. So remember 5 years ago when all those Galaxy Note 7s kept exploding? Well, it's happened again. More worryingly, it happened to a different model. Someone's Galaxy A21, a budget-friendly Samsung smartphone that debuted in the US last year, overheated and began sparking on Alaska Airlines Flight 751 from New Orleans to Seattle earlier this week. The flight crew put out the fire, which thankfully occurred just as the plane landed at its destination, but the cabin was smoky enough that passengers ended up evacuating on slides. There were minor injuries to two passengers, but everyone else was all right. Was this just a one-off event, or do we need to be careful with Galaxy A21s? No word from Samsung just yet as of recording. In other news, right on target for my prediction, Starbucks has officially launched their pumpkin spice line, nearly a whole month before fall officially begins. Even though it comes in cold brew form, if you're not ready for pumpkin just yet, they also launched a new flavor in the US and Canada, the Apple Crisp Macchiato. With brown sugar and caramelized spiced apple, it sounds like an apple pie in a cup. Also, kinda too fall-ish for me just yet, but I don't know, I mean, we make apple pies for like 4th of July sometimes, right? So maybe just pretend it's a summery blend of America in a cup. Take an iced one to your next barbecue. Well, that's it from me for today. As always, this show was produced by Ride Home Media and Kotke.org. I am Jackson Bird, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.
If you're in business, you probably have a website, but can your site handle your growth? How many visitors before your site slows down or crashes? What about storage and data security? From web hosting to virtual servers, Pear Networks provides the online infrastructure you need to start, grow, and flourish. When it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. No frustrating chatbots or sitting on hold for hours. Check out pear.com today to learn more. That's PAIR.com.